All right, friends, welcome to the Mentality of Combat Sports. We get together and we talk about sports psychology and the mentality of training and all kinds of stuff like this. It's probably the most fun podcast I do with my friend David Mullins. He's at DavidMullinsSportsPsychology.com and DavidMullinsMMA on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I'm Robin Black. David is a sports psychology consultant. He works with a lot of different MMA fighters as well as rugby players and
basketball, baseball.
But combat sports is a subspecialty for sure. Among the people he works with a lot of the people at the SBG Ireland team, which is definitely something we'll be talking about today. We were planning to talk about the mentality of a comeback.
Yeah.
George is talking about coming back, many things.
Yeah.
But as is often the case, Conor McGregor has shifted the focus of all things that people are talking about in fighting. And we should probably talk about that. Now, this is the mentality of combat sports. It is not the business of combat sports or the business of contract negotiations or fighter management or any of those things. So we're going to only probably look or mainly look at this from the point of view of the psychological effects, impacts, relationships, and so forth. But unless you're living, there's no chance that you don't know what we're talking about right now, because I don't know how you could possibly end up on a mentality of combat sports podcast and yet you didn't know that Conor McGregor said he doesn't want to do any more media whatsoever and has been in a conflict with the UFC. And at the time that we're doing this, the UFC has said they'll pull him from 200.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we start?
First thing, before we get into stuff, because like the SBG connection is there, but I am not privy to any inside stuff on this. So, this
which is good.
Yeah, it is good because I'm not.
Well, it's bad because you'd love to be in the loop, but it's good because it won't influence our conversation.
I'm not in the loop at all. I don't know what's going on. I'm waiting for updates like everyone else.
Yeah.
So that needs to be said up front.
One other thing I think that to set this tone. We've had this conversation multiple times, and many coaches have, fighters, everybody about press and stuff, but specifically, when Ronda was knocked out, and us and hundreds of others said, what she needs to do is not do movies, not do red carpets, not do interviews, not go on talk shows, not pose in bathing suits, don't do anything, but focus on becoming a better martial artist, a better fighter, and get ready for that fight. We all said that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot to this. Let's leave aside all the contract negotiation, the money side of stuff, the business side of stuff. Let's just assume that everything Conor said in his last statement, which is Thursday, let's just deal with that for now.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, you know, how much he's had to do, the demands he's been asked to, he just wants to get back and fight, and he's staring down the barrel of defeat, and he wants to correct that, and it's a big challenge ahead of him, and he wants to correct the preparation that was last, that obviously reflected on it, and part of it was, I'm not preparing enough. I'm not preparing like I used to before I had any of this stuff to deal with. So he has recognized that as a big distraction.
So you're him or someone like him. You recognize that's a distraction. I'm you or somebody like you. I'll say, well, why aren't we preparing as much as we used to?
Well, yeah, and a lot of it is because he can't. Because if you're being asked to go, like Dana's talking about, it's 3 months out, and it's you know, as if that should matter, you know. It's part of his preparation for this fight. He's a fighter. He's an athlete. That's what he wants to get done. So if you have to go to Vegas and then to Stockton and then to New York and then to Connecticut to do the ESPN stuff, and you have to do all the different in between bits, and you're not training, you're away from home, you travel there, that's exhausting, you travel back, that's exhausting. It might seem like a few days, but it's not, it's a lot longer either side as well, and that's then you have to get back into rhythm again. You're not eating the same as you would be, you're not sleeping the same as you would be, so you're playing catch up on the way back. It does have an effect.
Now it's a good time for us to mention our bias. You know Conor to some degree. We already mentioned you work with his coach and some of his teammates. I'm also very much of a similar mindset to him in a lot of ways. I've lived by a lot of similar philosophies. So I am very much sort of view it through my lens, which is like I look at things very similar.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to look at it from viewers who might think differently or other people who think differently. And one thing that will come up is people will say, well, everyone has to do that. Mm-hmm. Every fighter has to do that. And so and Nate Diaz has to do it too. So why is it different for you?
Yeah, and that's what I've heard a lot of people mm-hmm. saying. Not everyone has to do it, though. You know, that's the difference. Like, Ronda has had to do it, mm-hmm. and Conor now has had to do it. No one else has ever had to do it to this degree, to this level. Even George didn't have to do it, and he was probably the biggest star before those two.
Yeah.
Didn't have to do it to the same
level. But media is different now, too.
It's completely different now, and the UFC is on a different level now than mm-hmm. it was back then.
And he's
because of Ronda and Conor.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point pretending mm-hmm. that's not the reason why it's not. Like, this is everywhere. This is mainstream news. This is not just like MMAfighting.com and Fight Network news. This is everywhere. This is mainstream, this stuff. So it's gone to a new level. So not every fighter has to do it like this. And it's one of those things. I've been thinking about it too, where Conor kind of raised the bar in terms of promotion and what a fighter does and the world tour and the amount of sound bites they get and the stuff they can use to hype the fight. So he's raised the bar, and now when you want to go back to the norm or, mm-hmm. or below that, it's like not good enough. So what was above normal is now your new expected
normal.
And that's tricky when it's conflicting with what you want to actually focus on.
Well, again, it's hard to separate this from the business or the why, because my thought on this very topic is, let's even just pretend that every other fighter does have to do it now, or every other fighter does it, not has to. Has to is business. That's not what we're necessarily concerned with. If everybody else does it, that doesn't mean that that is what I will do to accomplish the things I want to accomplish, because you still have to be oriented towards what it is you're trying to accomplish. And what he's trying to accomplish, and every fighter is trying, many fighters are trying to accomplish, Demetrius Johnson is trying to accomplish, is continued striving for further greatness.
Yeah.
And along that path, you meet challenges. And among those challenges are, I am no longer able to train as hard as I want. I'm not as focused. How do I change that? And this was an interesting thought I had while I was looking forward to talking to you. We have controllables. For people who haven't watched a lot of our podcasts, we have controllables and non-controllables. What are those?
Yeah, so that's the foundation of everything I do with an athlete, is based on some things in our lives or in our training are controllable, like our sleep, the basics, our sleep, our food, like our conditioning. That's all, like your training, your performance on fight night, your mindset, that's all controllable for you. Who's in your group, who do you allow influence mm-hmm. you? And then non-controllables are things like contract negotiations, like who you're getting matched up with, like the opponent, what they're saying, what the fans react to.
If a parachutes into the ring while they're fighting.
There's so many non-controllables.
So we concern ourselves with the controllables. We focus on how we can do those better, improve our abilities to handle our controllables, and we don't.
We acknowledge the non-controllables. We know they're there. We can't hide from them. We can't pretend they're not there. We have to acknowledge them and consciously bring the focus back to the controllables.
So I feel like doing all this press, doing all this media, doing all this kind of stuff was a non-controllable. We've become successful enough that we are going right now to attempt to make that non-controllable a controllable. And in that action is the conflict with his boss.
That's exactly the same thought I had on the way out here. He's turning a non-controllable into a controllable. Yeah. I said that once before. Went to one of my fighters who decided to go on The Ultimate Fighter. Mm-hmm. They were waiting to get signed and waiting and hoping that Joe Silva would, you know, think that last fight was enough. Mm-hmm. And they still weren't getting the call, so then went on The Ultimate Fighter. Now they've turned a non-controllable into a controllable. Now you just go and win The Ultimate Fighter and you're going to get signed. And this is similar. He doing all the press, you have to do it. That's why you do it. You don't want to talk to Tim and Susie in the morning. But like, there's a benefit to it. From a marketing point of view, he gets paid more mm-hmm. than anyone else because of mm-hmm. all that he generates. But then there has to be a point where it gets in the way, and it's a conflict with what the training and the preparation. So by doing this, that's what he's trying to do, is take it back and make it controllable now.
And you might not have known when you said yes to everything and did more press than anyone's ever done and pushed it and sizzled
raising
higher,
the bar.
That you were doing it to such a degree that you'd never have to do it again. I don't know if that was conscious. As much as you can credit, it couldn't have been conscious.
No.
But on some level, there's an instinct to, if I just work hard enough at something that isn't controllable, perhaps one day the situations will change. And in doing that, you raise the profile large enough. And this is not a debatable thing. Every person who says, I hate that guy, I want to see him lose, this is ridiculous, the UFC shouldn't do this, I hate him, they are part of this.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of the energy around it that you've created to the point that you can be the most retweeted athlete in the last year and a half, including every athlete in the world. That was, in that moment, you've attempted to make this a controllable. And if the UFC or Dana White says no, what I feel like they're saying is, no, we're going to pull you, but we're going to acknowledge this because we're not going to not fight you. You're going to fight at 205, at UFC 205 or UFC 204 or UFC 208. And if and when that happens, it has now become a controllable, because they're saying that it's okay for you to make these choices.
Yeah, and I think that can be a long-term effect. And it's been interesting watching other fighters' reaction to it. John Jones publicly said, like, he respects Conor's balls for doing this, and he knows what Conor's. He's been on the side of that with the Chael Sonnen and Dan Henderson pullout thing. Mm-hmm. He's been on something similar. He stood his ground at the time too, and the card was pulled, and he was blamed for it and everything. But he didn't feel comfortable taking that fight, and he suffered consequences as a result. But he's back in top billing now. So he knows what Conor's kind of going through a little bit, having to fight that. So he respects it. Tim Kennedy has come out today and like, I would have expected him to sided with Conor, some of those guys are publicly able to speak about it. Other fighters maybe think that, but they're not publicly saying it because they're afraid of the consequences, or maybe they disagree with it, or they're jealous or whatever. But it is interesting seeing Jones and Kennedy, especially guys who are feel like they're able to say what they think. Yeah. That's what they think.
Well, a day or two ago, where we didn't know, I'm retiring, I'm pulling him from the card.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what was going on, but a conversation that we were having here, and an idea that I threw in there, is it doesn't really matter what's going on. Could be about money, could be about press conference, like they said, could be about anything. But it felt like, and this is the case in many things, any conflict between two individuals on some level is a conflict about control.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, or any two forces. Whether your wife wants to go to a certain restaurant and you want to go to another one, realistically, you could eat at either of those restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But you both want what you want. It's about control. If your business partner says, no, we want to spend this much money, and you say, no, we want to spend half as that on marketing, it's about money, but ultimately it's about control.
Yeah.
Who's going to and so this is what was the situation. And in all of our lives, whatever we are in a conflict that's about control, we're looking to be better at conflict. We're looking to be more able to work with other people and better. That's something we can all kind of improve on. But if there's a point where we have to stand up for something that we think is important, you have to have leverage.
Yeah.
And John Jones fought a battle very similar, saying, I'm not taking this fight. That was him making a non-controllable a controllable. I'm not ready for Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's going to do. He's a very different fighter. That's a non-controllable.
And there's a factor, too, with agendas are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I've been thinking about, too, with Dana. Dana wants the fight that's going to make the most money, and he has a control element to him, where he wants to be in charge and everything like that, and that's maybe more so than most in a position similar, but he wants to make the most money. So the Jones thing at the time, they had to cancel the card. They couldn't find a replacement, so it cost them a lot of money at the time. Jones' agenda is, well, he wants to keep his belt, he wants to win the fight. That's there, that's a factor. It's not as much of a factor for Dana.
Yeah.
Holly Holm taking the Misha Tate fight, Dana saying that she screwed up, and her manager screwed up, and they should never have taken that fight. Because why? Because his agenda is, He wants Holly versus Ronda 2 in the biggest fight, ever the UFC will have ever done. That's what his agenda is. Holly wants to challenge herself, mm-hmm. for real. She's a champion. The reason she's got to the level she's at is she wants to challenge herself. She wants to take on all competitors. She likes to challenge Amisha. So there's a different agenda. Connor wants to get the revenge on Nate. Like, as much, he's going to make a lot of money, mm-hmm. but he wants that revenge on Nate. Yeah. For real, he really wants that. Yeah. He wants to put in that performance. Yeah. He wants to right that wrong. Dana wants to control it and to make and to everything to be his way. So there's a conflict mm-hmm. with not just the control, but they're completely different agendas as well.
So unlike 99% of people who are watching this, I know Dana White a little bit.
Yeah.
He hired me. He interviewed me. I've sat and spoken with him, and I've also got an insight into how the workflow works. And he literally, I don't know if Chase can put it on you, but directly behind you is a poster. Just a poster, Jones versus St. Preux and Johnson versus Cejudo. Dana White will approve that poster. That doesn't sound like a lot until you realize they put out hundreds and hundreds of pieces of content, and he approves every single one of them. And there is no way you can tell him that's wrong, because he just points to the billion-dollar successful company that he's built. His workflow, the way that he's created the entire company around his workflow, he is a star. He's an, and regardless if somebody understands or likes him or dislikes him or sees the public personality, whatever, Conor McGregor is a star fighter, a star at capturing people's imagination. Many hate him, and people who hate him in ways we've rarely seen. There were people who hated me because I said positive things about him.
Yeah, and me.
Yeah, and you too. Right. Weird, right? That's really strange, but it's power. That is a type of power. So that's a star. Dana White is a business star. He's a television star. He is a star at promoter. And what he does is right, because the success proves him right. But these two people, both of whom are very who are stars and have large areas of influence and control, disagree on something right now. And that's what happens whether if two kids that are 8 years old disagree, or two people who own businesses disagree, or two stars disagree. And that's all we're watching right now.
Yeah, and it's there's a lot of ego involved, which makes it then tougher to compromise, because someone's going to look like they lost the conflict.
Right.
And that's the situation we're in right now.
Right.
We're in the middle of that, where someone's going to win and someone's going to lose.
Dana's a winner.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor's a winner. So, but there
has to be some way of finding a solution where both guys come off as winners.
And there will.
And that's possible.
And among them is pull them off this one, so and make UFC 200 immense, because it's UFC 200, and use this to make them at UFC 204 to be immense. Because the two goals of these two stars and the two forces at play is this one wants to be the best martial artist in the world. He also wants to make money. He also, you know, has many other agendas, wants to beat Nate Diaz, but essentially wants to be the greatest fighter humanly possible. That's what it seems his primary goal is.
Yep.
Is to become greater and greater and greater in the thing that he does. And this guy's is to be the best promoter in the world, which is to get the most fans, to be the biggest sport. Those two things align very nicely once you remove all the other things.
Yeah.
You want to be the greatest fighter in the world. You want to be the biggest, most successful, most special combat athlete that you can. You want to be the great martial artist. You want to have put on immense shows. Those two things go together really well. So ultimately, it's going to end up working out. But again, it's like we have migrated towards the conversation of that conflict, but there's psychology of that conflict too.
Very much so. And this is where conflict resolution and being able to have empathy and see where the other guy is coming from, it never needed to get to this point.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been handled so much better mm-hmm. on both sides that it didn't need to go public. It could have been someone could have stepped in.
Yeah.
And that's another one of those parts of that the reason both guys are in the position they're in, the reason Dana is the president of the UFC, the reason Conor's the biggest star in the UFC, like a lot of the reason why they're in that position is the same reason why they are not able to maybe listen to other people and do their thing their way and be pretty stubborn and things. So now it's about finding common ground and not looking at it as a win-lose kind of situation. because there's a lot of money to be made for both guys.
Yeah. Which is a motivating factor, it seems, for both. Certainly for the company, that's the drive. And even that, I don't know that Dana White is really all about that much money. He's about winning. He's about success. That's what it seems to me. You talk to him for 10 minutes, and you get an insight into him in the room, seeing him run a business. And he's a very impressive human being. Conor McGregor, you talk to him for 10 minutes and you're like, this guy's on, there's something else going on here. And that's what we're looking at. You've got, I'm going to change the subject ever so briefly. Again, there's a poster behind you. Demetrius Johnson. So, as a fan, I am a big fan of Conor McGregor, but I'm the biggest thing of interest to me is the path of growth, of continued desire to be more and more successful. Make your success become your norm and then reach for new success. That's the philosophy that I was referencing at the beginning. It's something that you've talked to me a lot more about. It's something I've always believed in and been about. And I see it personified in an athlete. So I like that. But Demetrius Johnson, I think, is my very favorite fighter as just a pure martial artist.
Just watching it without all the stuff.
Yeah.
He's my favorite fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I talk to him. I get to know him. And it's fascinating to me. So we'll make the connection, Conor McGregor, about the difference between he can spend 100% of his effort on training and fighting and growing as a martial artist. And for 3 days before a fight, a bunch of tomato cans will ask him why he doesn't sell pay-per-views.
Yeah.
He'll say a stock answer. He'll show up. He'll get his workout in the morning. He'll put on his outfit. 12 idiots in a row will come up and ask him the same question. He'll say thank you, and then he'll go back and train again. That focus, and it leads back. We discussed this with Rhonda and Connor. I brought it up a bunch of times before this point. There's a point at which you can't do everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to do everything. No. He just goes and he's the best fighter in the world.
That's what he wants to do. That was, to me, I read that statement that Conor put out, obviously.
Yeah.
The most interesting part of it to me was he said the word focus twice.
Right.
That to me is the real telling thing, the real kind of underneath the surface kind of thing in terms of just the fighting side of things. Forget the business side, just the fighting side. Focus. And it's that, like, he wants, like he said about going back to the old ways, that, like, what brought him up is training in the team with John, with your training partners, just looking to get better every day, and meeting this next challenge, whatever this opponent brings. And somewhere along the line, that got a little bit twisted and messed up and lost a little bit, which we've seen. It's a story told throughout time so many times. Rhonda's just before. George started to feel that pressure of it so much and wanted to get away from it. Anderson talked about the relief of not having the belt anymore and all that extra stuff. Because it's not just the belt, it's all the extra stuff that comes with it, where the focus can't be just on the fight. Demetrius, even though he's a champion and has been for a long time, hasn't really had to deal with that stuff. So he gets to focus on preparation and performance, and he does his own thing on Twitch, and he plays games and stuff, and that's just fun for him. So he has a pretty cool life. He does what he wants, and then every time we've seen him, he's better.
Yeah.
Every single time he's performed, he's been better than the last time. You can say that since the Dominic Cruz fight, since that loss, he had the McCall fights, and then he's just got better and better since then. Looking back on his record, and you look back on him. He has fought Dodson twice, and he's fought Benavidez twice.
McCall twice.
McCall, he drew the first one.
Yeah.
It was a weird kind of scoring thing that time. He won the rematch. He fought Benavidez, and then he beat him again.
Knocked him out.
He fought Dodson and beat him the second time even more comprehensively. There was a danger, like we talked last time about the rematches and stuff, where there can be complacency for the winner of the first bout.
Yeah.
So he beat Benavidez. And he beat Dodson, but he went and beat them even more convincingly the next time, because he is focused on himself. He is focused on putting in his very best performance, and he's allowed to do that because there's less sideshow, so he's able to get on with his own work, which that's all most fighters would like. He'd like more money and stuff, but I think the part that Connor's talking about not having is what Demetrius actually does have, is that ability to focus on what you want to focus on.
And then you talk to Demetrius, and he'd be like, yeah, I could use some of that Connor McGregor money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's a point, there's a trade-off.
Yeah. You remember when George was talking about, you know, he just couldn't stand the target on his back, mm-hmm. being asked the questions over and over, the same. And it, you could feel George's frustration when he would just say, I just can't believe they keep asking me the same questions.
Yeah.
And he's like, why don't I just do it once? And that's – the truth is in today's media – it doesn't even make any sense to go in. Like, I did about, I'm going to say, 10 radio interviews over the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. Because if it's a big Rhonda thing or a big Connor thing, I've got a bunch of friends in radio that I've known over the years that, oh, I got to call my UFC guy. He's up in Canada. Yeah. So I did the Sports Freaks in Arizona, who, and I love their show, and they're fun to talk to, and I enjoy doing it. But it only happens when... there's something like this. And Rhonda and Connor are something like this 24 hours
all
a day,
time.
Every day, all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah,
it's a strange one. But so let's again take it back and let's take it away from McGregor or Rhonda. But the idea, this is interesting to me. And sometimes I say things are interesting and I assume that everybody agrees with me. It's like, wow, this cup is black. If you often in life get really good at something, you can get so good at it that you don't get to do that thing anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People who are excellent directors suddenly manage a bunch of directors.
Yeah.
And people who are excellent computer programmers end up managing computer programmers. And that's a strange turning point in your life. And connected to that, McGregor became successful by being an excellent trainer and expressor of learning in the martial arts. So much so that he actually became kind of a television star who also trained the martial arts.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
How do you prevent that from happening? You have to understand, you have to identify when it's happening.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be knowing that it's happening while it's happening. So if Connor's now able to reflect on the Nate defeat and think, I didn't prepare as best I could have. I didn't come in there with that same mindset, that same. I wasn't as switched on. Yeah. I wasn't as focused. I didn't have it that night.
Yeah.
And that's on me.
Yeah.
And then why did that happen? And maybe it's because I was too focused on the extra stuff. Maybe I got carried away with all the hype and the mm-hmm. press and started to believe and didn't put in the same amount of work like I used mm-hmm. to. I didn't have that same hunger. And you can't just turn it on then. So then if he traces back the steps, he wants to go and address that. But you need to recognize that that's happening while it's happening to prevent it from happening. Yes, it's great to be able to learn from mistakes, but it's even better to recognize mistakes are about to happen or they're happening so you can correct them in the moment, and it doesn't need to come to the point where you lose or don't perform up to your standards. So that's about, a lot of that is about analyzing your days with like even simple things like the journal that mm-hmm. I do with the guys. Seeing if there's is there a dip, like analyzing trends in yourself, having good people around you is crucial to that as well. Not just yes men, but having real good people like, what was wrong with you there today? You know, I took you down so many times against the fence, or you didn't seem to have it today, or your strength and conditioning coach is talking to you about the numbers are less than last week, or you know, you dropped off there. What's going on? Are you sleeping okay? Are you eating okay? What's going on with you? That's good to have as well. But that reflection, that analysis needs to be happening regularly during the build-up, not just after the fight and looking back on a loss. And it can be as well, it can be happening for a while and the results don't reflect it, so then it just keeps happening. So you keep winning. The preparation has gradually been declining, but the results are super. So let's just keep this train rolling. Where if you're reflecting on performance alone, you start to recognize I'm not preparing as best as I used to. So regardless of the result, I need to improve the preparation.
Often I always like when we're chatting and we're using an example of a fighter to connect it to regular people's lives.
Yeah.
And do you find, I know you do jiu-jitsu and you do some other conditioning type of thing. Do you find when you, and the reason I ask this is for anybody who works out, that if you track your performance in the gym, then and it goes down, somebody, a good coach or yourself, will go, why is that happening? As you're tracking your performance in the gym, you can track, oh, how was my breakdown? How's my work? How's my performance at work? How have I been to be around? I've been treating my friends and my wife and my people around me good. That they're so connected. Once you start tracking one thing, you learn the ability to track other things.
Exactly. You're primed. That's the term. Mm-hmm. You become primed for that way of thinking. So getting into that headspace, into that mindset of improvement and analyzing yourself and stuff, you're primed for doing it, so you do it in the other areas of your life for sure. That happens. Like I like to, like with fighters coming into a fight, we will use priming to get them into the right frame of mind to be like. So on fight night, they're able to get themselves switched on as they want because they know what way they want to be, and in during the camp and the build up, they'll have been aware of what way they want to be on fight night. So then they know how to do it.
Tell me more about priming. Let's go off on a tangent about the.
So an example of priming, where we now we're doing it right now. We start talking about when you're in jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. What are you working on right now in jiu-jitsu? Leg locks or triangles from guard or whatever. So you start. Let's see how many you get. Let's pull guard instead of taking top. Let's pull guard and let's look to get some triangles.
Yeah.
And then you watch a few videos of a few guys that are really good at triangles, and you get yourself into that frame of mind of seeing the technique and thinking about visualizing the technique, and then you go and do your jiu-jitsu session focused on triangles, and you're catching guys in triangles in rolling. Yeah. It's like that's not an accident.
Right.
You were mentally primed for catching guys in triangles. You were in that space to do that.
I was telling you that I was working on Verdum and Stipe, my breakdown, and I said, "Well, on Friday, if I get this stuff together, all weekend, all I'm going to have to do is be aware of direction change. I'm working on that. I'll watch a few videos on direction change on athletic training, and I'll read that. Is that what I'm doing?" Like I'm just in the.
You're
mode.
Keeping yourself in that space. Yeah. You're keeping yourself in that frame of mind, so that it's there for you.
Yeah,
and you can go to it.
And can people do this anytime? More or less, the idea. So somebody wants to get better. They really, really care about how they're going to play soccer or football this summer. That's a focus. They want to really do that. They're the act of being connected to soccer on a deeper level can help them
for sure. Like even things like I would have in the past made highlight videos for the fighters when this is way before there was they were in the UFC and was just smaller shows. I get the videos off the online and edit together a little highlight reel for them, and they watch that and they see their performance and like a little quick 2 minute highlight reel, and it just gets you in that space of I'm gonna go and put on a performance like that. It's not a trick. It's not a trick to try and you're starting to feel like you when you watch that, you're starting to bring up the feelings that were associated with, and you're getting into that mindset of what got you there.
You're connecting to an idea on a more regular basis, on a deeper basis. So the reason I ask that is you see people making fast gains in our culture in all kinds of things. We'll see nobody ever landed a head kick, and 6 months later they're spinning head kicks in just fighting and in technology and in everything. There's people are making larger leaps than they've ever made. And a lot of people, if they find their passion, if they pursue the thing that they love doing, when they're at home, they've got websites open to it all the time. They're always consuming books on it. And that ability to stay connected to something that you're passionate about has never been as high as it is now. That's got to help people. That's got to be an ingredient in why we're seeing such huge gains in human athletic performance, intellectual performance, all these things.
It's possible to really narrow your focus in on that thing you really want to get good at and consume it all the time now. Before, if you were into soccer or MMA or whatever, you'd have to wait for it to be on TV and then you'd watch it at that time.
Right.
And then that's it. But now, it can be, if you want, it can literally be 24/7 for you.
I am honestly consuming or absorbing something to do with mixed martial arts all hours except for that I'm sleeping, or the one baseball game I'm going to go to with my friends this Sunday if I'm done my breakdown of time, and when I'm with my wife, and even then sometimes I'm on the phone. I try not to be. And that's it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's healthy, but you can accomplish a lot, because what used to be that 4 hours a week, when I used to watch kickboxing as a teenager, I watched Wide World of Sports, which was a TV. Did you guys have that?
Yeah, we had that.
And I watched it every Sunday, waiting for when Jean-Yves Thériault was going to kickbox. Yeah. And I knew it was coming up. Well, I got to watch race cars this week, and then I got to watch tennis next week, because every 4 months I might see him on that Sunday kickboxing.
That's
now
the way
I can find it. I can with with a Google search, I can find 900 options.
Yeah, yeah. And there is a balance then as well of you can overdo it and just leave aside the rest of you as a person. Mm-hmm. And then you're not as well-rounded and
other
that thing got taken away from you, this crisis time. So for a fighter, there needs to be that balanced human who does fighting as a profession, because that could be taken away from you like that with an injury or something. And then it doesn't need to be crisis time, what am I doing now? It's just, okay, that part of me is not there anymore, but I'm going to go on and do other stuff.
And what if that part of you as a fighter, you feel like it's taken away when you get on planes for 13 hours
exactly.
and you have to do 50 interviews, and you're suddenly spending a lot of time coming up with catchphrases? And I mean, Chael Sonnen did not become a better fighter when he became a better promoter and entertainer.
No. He became a better known fighter.
Yeah, and he made a lot more money. He became a more successful person financially, and he seems to enjoy it. He seems to have a fun life and all those things, but he did not become a better martial artist. And I think that's the concern, and that's back to that original thing, is if you really are, your calling is martial arts. Doing a breakfast television show is not martial arts.
No, it's not the reason you got into it in the first place. It's a side effect of the success you're having, so you can plan for that, you can be aware of it, but there is a certain point where if you're just having to do more and more and more of it, there is the trade-off with your preparation and your training is not going to be as good, and then you're not going to be as good as you could have been. So we've seen it throughout history. I mean, so many times. Dana during the week was talking about Mike Tyson had to promote his fights and stuff. But Mike Tyson is an example of a guy who got to a certain level, and then just that stardom and everything, the chaos came in, and he was never as good as he was in the 80s.
When his life
later on
got worse.
Yeah.
His
life,
not just losing a title or losing a fight, but his life deteriorated.
Yeah.
So he's not a great example.
No, not a good example. It's not because he had to promote his fights, but it's because he got to a certain level and then got away from what got him to that level.
Yeah.
The example of the guy who, to me, has been able to maintain at the top level is Floyd. But Floyd, when we're talking about controllables and non-controllables, he made the promotion the ultimate controllable because it's Mayweather Promotions.
Right.
So he does lots of promotion, does lots of work, but it's on his say-so, on his time, on his schedule. That's what he did. That's part of the reason why he was able to maintain the very, very top level and still be able to put in super performances all the way through as well.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating times for sure, and fascinating how connected. I mean, when you see people, there's no accidents getting to the top. It's all going to be a certain amount of mentality and drive and lifestyle and choices and all those things. So it should come as no surprise that the variables that come off of those things connect to that. Your decision making, your choices, what's best for you if you can make those. So let's shift to John Jones for a bit.
Yeah.
We discussed rematches last week, and we were talking about him and Cormier and so forth. He's got a last minute opponent. Did we talk about OSP a little bit? I don't know.
Not really. No, no.
No. So have you seen any interviews with Ovince St. Preux talking about John Jones or anything? Have you seen much?
I haven't seen much, and I was it seems like I was thinking about this from a kind of a motivational goal kind of orientation kind of way of looking at where he's going in with nothing to lose a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's part of the reason why he'll step up on short notice to fight Jones for the interim belt. It's like a shot to nothing.
Yeah. I didn't have this before, so I might as well take it.
Yeah. If you've seen interviews or anything with him, maybe this will back up what I'm going to say, but he has got nothing to lose in a way. You know, if he goes in there and puts in a great performance and loses, he's now in people's minds, and he just put in a good performance against the best guy in the world. If he gets smoked by Jones while he was fighting Jones on short notice, what was to be expected?
And he wasn't the interim title holder when he took it, and then if he loses, he's not the interim title holder after. He's a guy who got to. Yeah, I agree. What I've noticed, and again, it's just people talking, and in some cases, now he hasn't exactly been hounded by the media in his life, so it's not like he's like, oh God, I got to have these canned answers for these tomato cans or ask me stupid questions. He's going to answer to a certain degree, but what I found interesting is he seemed to be sort of saying, it sounded programmed and not programmed, and again, this is my feeling only, not programmed to just placate or placate, what's the word, placate?
Placate, yeah.
Placate. Make them feel all right. Somehow I never knew if that was a hard or a soft C. Placate the interviewer. More so, it's like he's been programmed. Like, I'm a better athlete. Like, he's someone has given him the list of how and why he can win.
Yeah.
And he is
sticking to that
list.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a bad idea for him.
No. If that's someone's gone through that, or maybe he's done it himself, mm-hmm. where he's like, wait it up, I'm a better athlete, I played college football or whatever. Yeah. And
I'm younger, I actually have more experience, I've got a lot of power,
he
hasn't dealt with somebody as physically strong, like he seemed to have a nice outline of what he was bringing to the table.
Yeah, and that's a good thing for him to be focused on. He's aware of the challenge, so mm-hmm. I want you focus on what you can get done. I want you to focus on the reasons why this can be your performance. You have to realize what the challenge is and have a plan in place to how to deal with it. But that makes sense that he would be looking at the reasons why. I would be worried if he was saying, well, John Jones is the best fighter on the planet, and he's better than me in stand-up and in the wrestling and on the ground. He's much better than me everywhere. That would be bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it makes sense for him to be focused on where he thinks he's stronger, but it's still going to come down to like with that thing where you've got nothing to lose, uh-huh. that can be tricky, uh-huh. because when the going gets tough, it's like, I didn't really believe I was going to win anyway, so then you can kind of fold a little bit.
The thing I thought would happen is the thing that was going to happen in the back of my mind is actually happening.
And I don't want to if I'm working with a guy who's in a situation like this where it seems like a win-win. It's not a win-win. Mm-hmm. And we need to acknowledge that what do you want from this here? You know, you want to put in a performance. You want to get the win. That's what you want to go and do. So it can't be that win-win kind of taking the pressure off, making it easier on yourself and the build-up kind of thing. You want to accept the challenge head-on and demanding that top performance from yourself. So there's been loads of examples in the past of guys who have had similar kind of situations where they're coming in against a top guy. Even Horcher last week against Habib had the same kind of a thing, and he put up a really good fight.
Yeah, was not going to fault.
No,
he was not absolutely not going to fault. He can take that with him out of that fight forever.
Yeah,
he knows when you face the top guys in the world, he maybe doesn't yet have the collection of skills to win it, but he's got the heart and desire to stay in there.
Yeah.
With those people who... I mean, I've seen Khabib... when I was doing that Shooto Brazil show, Khabib's last fight before going to the UFC was against the guy who headlined in Shooto Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I watched him fight Khabib in Russia at 170. He's a big dude, and Khabib's just lighting him up in those same things. And you saw him go out. Horcher stayed right in there, you know. And Horcher's a much smaller man and took a lot of abuse in that fight.
Yeah, he did. And he comes away with, like, he put everything he had into that fight.
Yeah.
You know, everything he had, he gave it. Mm-hmm. Only he knows if he truly believed he could win it going in. But if it's possible that you can, and it is every time because it's MMA, then you're better off believing that it is possible rather than going in with a win-win. Yeah. If I lose, whatever, I wasn't expected to win anyway. That's easy. Takes the pressure off, but it's not going to be the best approach.
And Ovin St. Preux can win.
Yeah, for sure.
He can win. Nobody's unbeatable.
No.
And Henry Cejudo can win, too.
Mm-hmm.
People lose all the great fighters all lose one day, you know. So you're right. You might as well go in there knowing that I can win this fight.
Yeah.
Now, if I fought BJ Penn, I probably actually can't win this fight. So is it still better for me to think I can win the fight?
Well, I'd have a problem with your manager if you're fighting
BJ
Penn.
That was a bad we put me in an uncontrollable
But if it's a matchup like Cejudo and Demetrius or OSP and Jones, then they are winnable fights for the guys. And then it's about looking at what the best performance would look like. What's the game plan? What's the tactics? What are you trying to get done? How and getting yourself in the right frame of mind to be able to go in and put in that best performance and do it. And knowing that it is possible and believing that it really is possible, and it's not like a shot to nothing. It's far from it for that.
Sure.
Holly with Ronda. It's hard now to think back and it's harder for you because you called it before, yeah. But it's hard if you think back to before. Nobody thought Holly had a chance against Ronda. Nobody thought Dillashaw had a chance against Barrow. And these kind of examples.
I called that one, too.
Yeah.
But I've been wrong a million times, too. But the weird thing about the underdog ones.
Yeah.
Now, if I went ahead and said that Dillashaw was going to win that fight and something else happened, the truth was Dillashaw could have still won that fight. Like, they're still the same two guys.
Yeah.
The events are going to unfold the way they're going to unfold. And when you're walking downtown, if you turn right, everything in your day changes compared to if you turn left.
Yeah.
Everything. And that is every moment of every single fight. So if Holly didn't win that fight, I'm still not wrong.
She could have won that fight.
She could have won that fight.
Yeah.
And if Dillashaw didn't win that fight. But when you dig into them, what I saw were possibilities that happened to be exactly how it went down. That possibility was still there. I wasn't wrong analyzing the possibilities of how Holly's skills could be done against Ronda. But if Ronda caught that hand different, or if Holly didn't drop her hips on that takedown, that fight unfolds differently. But you still were not wrong that Holly's collection of skills would have done that. And it's the same thing when you are right. You could have been wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the convoluted point that I'm trying to make is Henry Cejudo could win this fight.
100% he could.
If Henry Cejudo wins this fight, it doesn't mean we've been wrong about everything we've always said about Demetrius.
No, and that's the problem.
And that's a weird reaction. And this is the mentality of viewing fights now. But it's a bizarre reaction to me that it was Ben Rothwell beat Alistair Overeem. And literally everybody's like, Alistair Overeem is shot. He's got to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Got to retire. He's over. Alistair Overeem knocked out Junior Dos Santos. A little slip. Boom. It was beautiful. And he slipped a punch that wasn't even coming. But it's such a beautiful shot. He lands on him. Such a beautiful punch. Beats him. Literally hundreds and hundreds of people. Junior Dos Santos is shot. He needs to retire.
Yeah.
Junior Dos Santos, who was beaten by Alistair Overeem, who needs to retire, and then Junior Dos Santos needs to retire. Overeem should have retired because Ben beat him.
Yep.
Dos Santos just beat Rothwell, and literally people's reactions are Rothwell needs to retire.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything doesn't have a dramatic meaning. Everything, the beauty of fighting isn't the crazy reaction that happens after something. It's the millions of variables at play in every moment of every fight.
Yeah.
And I know this isn't quite the point of our podcast, but I just always want people to see that. Like, I want people to see fights as millions of mathematical variations. And what we saw tonight, the reason it's special is because it's one of many.
It's a unique event. Like, that's what I stress with every single fighter I work with. This fight upcoming for you is a unique event. So, yes, we can take the lessons from the past experiences and everything and carry them into this, but you still have to apply everything for this one event. Doesn't matter what you've done before, this event, you need to bring it, switched on, mentally focused, put in the work, put in the preparation, and then go and do it on the night. So if Demetrius Johnson doesn't do that for this one event versus Henry Cejudo will beat him, but it doesn't mean that everything Demetrius Johnson did before has been a waste. Mm-hmm. It just means this unique event, he lost, he wasn't as good. Mm-hmm. And when they rematch, it might be a different story, but you have to prepare for each unique event. For the fans, I'm not too bothered about what way they view it, but
I just do because I really want them to see it right, like not the right way, this cool, well, I mean, it is the correct way. What we're saying is true.
Yeah,
like this is true. These are a unique event, and every single time they match up. And when you watch Johnson and Cejudo, if it's epic and it's brilliant in whatever way it ends up, a part of it can be Rory and Robbie is the one we'll always bring. They both were at their best in many ways. They both came and brought it for that moment.
Yeah.
They could rematch, and the first fight was really good. Not quite that.
Yeah.
But it's what they did tonight and what they drew on tonight and what they were capable of bringing tonight. But they could have that fight 1,000 times. It would never look the same.
Never.
Never.
No.
You know?
No. And yeah, that's one of those things where it can frustrate you if you think about it too much.
Yeah. So. Do you know Seth Godin? Do you know he's a writer? He's a very – I'll send you some stuff from his blog. But I get a – I recommend it highly. But I get little blog posts. You know, certain writers will send you just a blog post coming in your email. One that he had today was talking about being able to be selective of the things, seeking the right influence. And that he categorized it literally as those two things. Is this something you, my friend, or, you know, a coach or anyone, and a comment or a feedback, is this feedback that will be valuable for me to make an improvement or understand what it is that I'm doing or assess it or change it or influence me in some way? Because if it is not that, then it's something I should not be listening to whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that there really are only those two categories.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's true. But then there's also the part where do you have to read every single piece of feedback to get the valuable ones?
Yeah, but I don't think the point was to read it and decide. I think once we've decided, oh, random person on Twitter who starts something with your, Y-O-U-R, or whatever, or, you know, we'll dismiss that. We'll put it in the category of that. So, what's his name? SBG guy who retired.
Cathal Pendred.
Cathal Pendred should have categorized, because of a weird momentum and reaction at which an audience started to view him, he should have categorized almost everything said by a random audience member as that category.
Yeah.
Because it literally could have no positive influence on him. Most of it is not super educated. Yes, they do pay your bills, but it doesn't mean you have to allow them to.
Even the positive stuff.
Yeah, that's
even
right.
The positive stuff, you can't pick and choose then, because then it's not going to be that. It's not going to be that valuable. That's huge for with the work I do as well. Is knowing who's in your network, who's in your group, who are you allowing to influence you. You want good people around you, people who have your best interest, but people who have good, valuable information, good feedback to be given you, honest information to be given you as well. And then it's a lot about then how you're going to. Are you able to receive that information? If you have that growth mindset, then you'll be happy to take it on, to take on feedback that is maybe not you did a great job there, maybe it's you did not great there and that needs to be better because of this, and you should have done that better. If it's someone who knows what they're talking about, then yeah, you should be all up for taking on that information. But having that group around you is crucial. And they don't need to be day-to-day people. Mm-hmm. They can be people you speak to every now and again, or they can be on the other side of the world and you just speak to them, you know, by email and stuff. But knowing who's in that group that are giving you valuable information.
Now, I've been all over the place today. The reason I'm looking at my phone, somebody asked me the other day, is because we get messages from our producer, Chase, on the phone about how much time we have left and stuff. I'm a bit all over the place today, and I'm thinking that's a function of working on a breakdown and absorbing so much of this Connor story info and getting ready for John Jones, and we shot the pre-show and stuff. So I've wandered a lot today. It's something that we do, and often it's fun. But center me back to something here. Let's talk about something, another idea or concrete thought that you had that we should touch on today.
So if we have time to talk about the comeback, because I've been thinking about that recently, where we had a lot of rematches like we talked about coming up. We also have a lot of comebacks. Cruz came back from a long injury. Yeah, George might be and probably is coming back. Nurmagomedov came back. John Jones is coming back on Saturday. Connor will be coming back from retirement now. So
regardless of how short-lived. And there's various lengths of that.
Yeah.
I mean, if George comes back from 3 years, Cruz maybe came back from almost 3 years. Cormier may only come back from 4 months, but there must be some connection.
Yeah. And Ronda's come back is a factor there as well.
Yeah.
The reasons for the not being there, they're different for all of those. Like Cruz and Habib are similar, but even they're different because Cruz came back and then he had to go away again. Mm. Jones is a completely different one, where it was self-inflicted, a lot of it. Ronda's is self-imposed, and then, you know, there's lots of different reasons. So the reason matters for each of those. That's one of the key things, where we can talk about generals with the psychology of coming back and how you deal with why you've been away, but within each of those is an individual with individual reasons, with individual reactions to the to having to be out, with individual ways of looking at the comeback and everything. So anything I do with a fighter or anyone coming back from a long-term layoff will be based on the individual and their personality and how they're reacting and how they're looking at things. So that's crucial to the general story.
And are we starting with, I mean, that could start and would be different for every person, but to some degree is a beginning of that conversation, why did you leave in the first place?
Yeah, and being able to deal with that. So what are your thoughts like around the reason why you had to go away? Dominic with the injury, that's unfortunate, that's just bad luck. And it even doubled down when you get re-injured again and again. So you can start to go down the road of why me, this is never going to work out, and start to become a little bit of learned helplessness, like what's the point of even trying, what's the point of rehab and I'm not going to ever get back. That's a road you could go down, so you need to be conscious of the thoughts and stepping in there, understanding that's normal, a normal human reaction to that, stepping in with a more positive outlook on it though, a different perspective on it.
Wouldn't you love to talk to Dominic Cruz?
Oh, like, yeah. Maybe more than most. Yeah. Maybe more than most fighters.
I've spoken to him, and I've spoken to him about technique and about fighting TJ Dillashaw and their technique and stuff, but I like to talk to him without a camera.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we last week, and it's something you brought up before, nobody should think they're bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think you're bulletproof, then, oh, my God, I got shot. Something happened. You will get shot. You will have some problems. We need to realize that that's normal, and it's how we adapt to them. He comes off, like, to the world like he's bulletproof.
Yeah.
He presents that. But he can't be.
No.
No way he'd have been this successful.
And he would have had those moments exactly. When he was rehabbing.
And wouldn't that be the thing that would be fascinating? If he was honest, if he wasn't protective or he wasn't concerned or trusted you, it would be amazing to be able to see into his mind the steps. Because when you talk to him on television, whether that is how he feels good about expressing himself or it's a controlled thing for how he presents it to the world, he's like talks a very positively, very self, very strong, very mentally strong about overcoming and all these things. But there had to be other than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I believe that is. I believe that the positive, like that is his default.
Yes,
that's what he returns to. But there would have been meanders away from that where he would have been a bit more negative, and there would have been
scared.
Those moments. Why? Yeah. What if I don't make it back? Yeah. Or what if I injure it again? What if the knee goes again? There would have been those moments, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay to have those moments. It's not about not having the doubts, like I said last week. No one is bulletproof. No one's going to have 100% confidence and self-belief the whole time. You're going to have the doubts, but what are you doing to step in and change those thoughts? Because plenty of guys have come injured, got injured like that and never came back. Because they didn't put in the work to get the rehab done, or they put it in half and they never really got back to the level they could have. He met the challenge head on, got his mind in the right place to be able to meet the challenge of the rehab again and again and come back. So the thoughts initially, like John Jones when he was suspended, it could have been like, screw them, I don't need this.
Right.
I'm done with this. And I'm sure there was a little bit of that there too when they took the belt from him and he got suspended and everything. And he could have done a lot of blaming and you know, it's gone down that road. And I'm sure he did, but then get himself back. And then he's put in more work, it seems now, than ever in terms of his preparation, which is a whole different topic, because that can be, as positive as that is in terms of what your performance can be now, that you've put in more preparation than ever, and you seem to be like pretty locked in what you're doing, there's more pressure now on him, because there could have been a little self-handicapping in the build-up of previous fights, where if you're doing coke a few weeks before you fight Daniel Cormier, and you're not really training for Gustafsson, then it's like, look what I did. I still did it, though.
Yeah. And if you lost, you got a built-in experience.
Yeah, a little bit. But now he has ramped up that preparation. Yeah. He's been putting in work for a long time. And he's been he's changed his approach. So now there's added pressure on him within himself, if you want. So that's there. But his reaction to the setback seems to have been pretty positive overall. And taking this fight even is a reflection of that, where he really wants to get back in, where he had his out if he wanted it, where Cormier pulled it out, but he really wanted to take the fight, so that says a lot as well. So the psychology of the comeback, you need to be aware of the thoughts that you're having, not just going with the momentum of them, but stepping in, understanding that there will be some negativity there, but you get to have a lot more say in your mindset than just going with the momentum of it. You can step in and be conscious and have more useful, valuable information that you're telling yourself. So that's huge, the first thing.
Quick one, Carla Esparza is coming back.
Yeah.
And I've Cody, one of our guys, he does Bookie Beatdown here, he went and interviewed her like 4 or 5 months after it, and they were like, I'm not talking about that loss. I'm not talking about Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Like, very visceral response. Like, absolute do not want any. That's not a great sign, right?
No, it's not good at all.
You know, I don't want to talk about it. She got angry. Then it was brought up once at the very end. She went back, said something to her manager, and her manager shut down the Felice Herrig interview because he managed both of them. She was like, and you could see her angrily saying, I said it. And it was literally, I think he asked her just about her upcoming fight.
Yeah.
So I talked to her about her and then brought that up. She got mad and that was it.
Yeah.
That's not a great sign for
no,
her.
No, it's not. We,
back,
we,
right?
we can't pretend that. We all saw the Joanna fight and it happened.
Yeah.
So if the response publicly is to not talk about it, then it's a sign that that's what's happening internally as well. When she's private, it's just not. That's not. That was just a once-off. That's not. I'm the Invicta champion. I was the UFC champion. That's me. I'm not the fighter that fought Joanna.
Right.
That can be. You're missing out then on all the lessons you could have take from that fight. All the growth you could have had from it. Failure. It hurts bad. Painful. That was painful. Not just physically, but the mental anguish from that fight would have been really hard to take and hard to deal with, and you've got to meet that failure. You can't just pretend it's not. You can't just put it down to whatever reason or ignore it. You've got to meet that head on, because that if you do and you feel the pain of it, and that can become useful then when if you're growing from it, you can get some resiliency and some strength from that, and look to, you know, make the changes and improve. But if you're ignoring it, that's you're missing out then. So that's an interesting comeback, because again, it's not a layoff in terms of how long she's been out. It's not huge compared to, it's not abnormal for a fighter, but she's coming back off having lost her belt. So that's still a comeback.
Yeah.
You know?
And the girl who took it has beat 2 or 3 other people since. At least
she beat Penny and Val. Penne, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's fought twice since then and had 2 great performances, and you haven't come back at all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't due to injury. So that's an interesting.
So the gap
one.
Has widened then if you start thinking about it like that.
Yeah.
Especially if you're still the same you were. You haven't grown from
it.
So that's an interesting one. And again, it's all about the thoughts that you're having and what way you're what way you're stepping in. What is the perspective now on that whole experience and ready to go forward.
So now we've done that, whether in her case, maybe she's done that since Cody was there.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of work can be done in 4 months, 5 months, 6 months.
For sure.
So seeing something, oh man, they looked bad, you know, when I saw him in this interview, 5 months of great work can change all that. Or Jones, who appears to have been doing the right things, or we've talked to George, we found out why he left, what changes, why he wants to come back. Now we've done that. What's the next step?
Yeah, so that's a continuous thing, though. Those thoughts are never going to... It's not, okay, I got everything right, and then off I go. Because that's going to be a continuous thing throughout the build-up and in the different stages of the comeback. There's going to be days where you're not feeling as good as different thoughts. So that's constant. You don't just get that set and then off you go. You can never take that mindset for granted. Having the support network around you is crucial as well, around the stage where you have had the setback that you need to come back from. So Jones with his arrest and all that stuff, his court case, Dom during his rehab, Habib during his rehab, Rhonda during her loss and everything. Having good people around you, that's crucial. And this is the problem. You can't just have them around you now all of a sudden. You needed to have them around you before the setback so that you can refer to them when you get the setback. So then you should always have good people around you, because you never know when the setbacks are coming.
Right.
So that's why it's crucial as well. So that's a constant thing as well, having those people that you can refer to. Keeping in perspective as well, in terms of, obviously, those examples there are big and affecting the person's career and life and everything like that. But being able to see the big picture, you know, and like that, like I'm talking about, the injury doesn't need to be this hugely catastrophic thing where my life is over now. It's not, even if it was a career-ending injury, it's still not a, it's still not one of those things where you can't go into some other path or go into some other way. So you need to keep that balance and that perspective. Having the belief that you can come back is huge, and that's part of the thought process that goes into overcoming the setback, as well as seeing a path to get back where you want to get to. That's crucial. Having a sense of humor about it can be super useful if you can get to that point. That sounds like a moot kind of point, but it is important to be able to have that. So that's an important thing as well. And then resetting goals after the setback. And like for Dominic, he was getting ready for Uriah Faber in the third fight after the Ultimate Fighter, and then boom, injured. And now the goal can't be Uriah Faber now. It has to be rehab and get all the work done after the surgery. Same for Habib. Jones' goal was to, you know, beat the next opponent and just keep this party rocking on. But now it has to be get my life in order. The goals have changed. So resetting the goals and carrying them through. So that's crucial too. So you can see how all these things have been at play for each of these people. And now we're getting to the point where they are back, and then we see what they're going to do.
And we see who handled that well.
Yeah.
And we see who grew from it and got better. I mean, Dominic Cruz really.
Yeah.
He's in a weird kind of way. This is one of those examples of, you know, that fork in the road or that turn right or that turn left. Sometimes there are devastating things. Your knee was blown out.
Mm-hmm.
Like your life was going along this when your knee was blown out. And since that knee was blown out, he has become smarter, become better, overcome things, come back and had his best performance in the fight back, got his title, become a great analyst, learned more about life, learned more about himself. Like, the growth that this guy has had since blowing out a ligament or two in his knee is just shocking.
Yeah.
You know? But that goes back to that thing where it's like, an event doesn't have to have meaning. It's just an event.
Yeah.
You know? And it was something I was talking about at the gym today. We've talked about it before. Martial arts is just such a good analogy for life. You don't freak out. So I'm in the mount, and I'm elbowing you in the face, and that's great. And you reverse me, and now I'm on the bottom, and you pass the half guard, and I give up my back, and I'm on my back. It's just a position.
Yeah.
All I do with you on my back is work my way back up to the top and begin passing again.
Yeah.
It's just a position. It doesn't have to have meaning. You know, no matter where I am, I'm trying to be safe, maintain my position, and advance my position.
Always.
Always.
From whatever position you're in, you're just trying to do your best in that position, apply the correct techniques in that position, and focused on the right stuff in that moment. So that's the same with life, like you said. It's 100% true. It can be a good thing as well, like the example of Dominic. There's no better example now for a young fighter who has blown out their knee than looking to what Dominic did. Habib even talked about that he looked to Dominic. Conor talked about George when he blew out his knee. And we're seeing that with Cejudo going into the fight with Demetrius. He's talking about what Holly Holm did to Ronda Rousey.
Brilliant.
Because he can see a comparison in the build-up and in the setup to the fight and the expectations and everything. So he's taken some kind of positivity and a little bit of mindset from the vicarious experience of what Holly was able to do. So
from my perspective, as the my area of study, is the difference is that there was a big hole that Holly found. I don't know that he knows or could, if in secret, I swear, I will not tell Henry what's up. Well, I think he can't do this, and I think I can do that better. I don't know if he's identified that, whereas Holly and her team have.
Yeah.
So that's a difference.
Yeah.
Maybe he has, though. Yeah. Maybe there's something. I mean, I just watch tape on fighters and study it. Like, there could be something that Demetrius is not doing well. I don't know what that is, and I've dedicated my life to studying that kind of thing, but it could be there. Actually, it is there. If we go ahead 25 years of understanding of fighting, 25 years from now, you'll look at Demetrius Johnson, if everything moves away, and he'll look primitive.
Yeah.
So it is there. Once the knowledge surpasses, you have to surpass the knowledge to identify, understand where it's going to be and what the high level of something is going to be at, and look back. Because, you know, whatever stage of anything, when the guys are wearing leather helmets and they're going back and they're running a pattern in football, that was the highest level ever at that time.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing in any sport right now is the highest level ever, But it's not the end.
Yeah, for sure.
At some point, Demetrius Johnson, whether that's in 10 years or 30 years, he'll look primitive. So that means it exists. There are higher levels of fighting that can happen. I'm not sure Henry Cejudo has access to that, but it's there.
Yeah, 100%. And there's also the fact that it's a unique event. So if Demetrius isn't switched on, mm-hmm. ready to go, prepared properly, mentally ready to go mm-hmm. for this unique event, then he will not perform to the level that we've come to expect from him, and that can be a reason why mm-hmm. the Cejudo mm-hmm. can win the fight. Same for Jones. We're, like we talked about with OSP, where there's a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
If the favorite Jones or Demetrius starts to think of this is a lose-lose,
yeah.
If that can happen going into a competition where the expectation is, well, I should beat this guy,
right?
And I don't really gain a lot from beating this guy. Was expected to beat him. It's not mm-hmm. really much of a challenge. If that's the mindset, then we're in trouble.
Uh-huh.
We're in trouble. So as much as the win-win, I don't like it, I don't like the lose-lose either.
Uh-huh. Well, with the I'm expected to destroy this guy, might come somebody acting out of character in search of destroying that guy. When, you know, I spoke with Anthony Pettis this week, and there's a few things he talked about. I'll mention the other one. It relates to our friend Chad Laprise, who told me something very similar. And other fighters have said, maybe it'll be the last thing we talk about today. But he also was saying, you know, if I started thinking, well, I got to jump off cages every week, like I've got to do crazy things, he wouldn't be able to do what he does.
Yeah.
You think for one moment it's like, oh, my God, I have to do. And I, again, with tying Conor back in, there's little elements of that when he tried to take Diaz's head off with every single punch.
Yeah.
He was influenced by this guy called it the Celtic Cross, the greatest weapon in the game. Well, when expressed the way that it's expressed perfectly, it can be categorized like that. Faraz called it the touch of death. Now, if you, in your mind, it's like, all I got to do is get this on him, you're actually expressing it differently. It's a punch, when done perfectly, thrown in a state of freedom, not in a state of desperation.
Yeah.
But that's a separate idea. But, yeah, so... Pettis saying if he's expected or believes he has to do that every fight, and if Demetrius thinks, I got to get a guy like this out of there in the first round, I got to destroy him, he's not fighting like Demetrius Johnson.
No, and that's why it's always better to set your own performance targets for intrinsic, process-oriented, performance-related targets instead of the
result-related.
Yeah, the result-related and beating the opponent, because it's just not going to get the best out of you if you're doing enough to beat the guy, or if you're allowing your perception of the opponent to dictate what level you're bringing, technically and mentally. So you set your own challenge for yourself. That's always the best way to do it. Demand the best performance you've ever put in every single time, because you should be better than you were last time because of the work you've done in the interim. So that should be forever with it.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be conscious of all the stuff that can seep in, like all the media obligations mm-hmm. and the interviews and movie deals and
red carpets
and opponents that you don't, that you haven't really maybe perceived as not on your level, and you're just going to smoke them and all this kind of different stuff. Then if that seeps in, then you're not really being truly honest with the preparation and not challenging yourself to mm-hmm. put in the best performance you could put in, which... That's all I ever want in going into a fight, is that's truly, really the mindset that the fighter is carrying in, is I'm going to put in the best performance of my life here. If that's truly what you're doing, then you can get some stunning performances.
Yeah. So last topic, and then we can circle back to anything that we talked about to kind of wrap up. But Pettis was in, and we were talking about a number of things. You saw the piece I did with him.
Yeah, it was cool.
And he was talking about when he's able to just go in and jump off a cage, or just go in and do his thing, and it almost feels, he's like, I can't take credit for that. It just kind of happened.
Yeah.
That's that flow state we've talked about a lot. And he said that's essentially all of his fights, with the exception of the last two.
Yeah.
And the fact that he connected to that was over-focus on what he shouldn't,
I can't get taken down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't get taken down. I can't be on the ground. And he's like, now he's like, hey, because when you look back, the Ben Henderson performance, he wasn't worried about that. And he stopped all the takedowns. Then he did end up on the ground throwing a cartwheel kick.
Mm-hmm.
And then he submitted him.
Yeah.
I mean, that is essentially exactly what he's talking about. Ah, whatever. If he takes me down, I'll submit him or I'll get back up.
Yeah.
Then it also allowed him to take the risk of throwing the cartwheel. And not only did the risk not backfire, it led to a new position. And in that new position, it's just working from here.
Yeah.
Oh, I know how to armbar him. And then with Gil Melendez... Melendez, a hell of a wrestler, and Melendez was like, I gotta take him down. I can't stand with him. You could feel Melendez being uncomfortable in the striking.
Yeah.
So he was overly of trying to avoid something.
Yeah.
As a result, Pettis just defended, and when he got out there, hurt him and submitted him. He'd never been submitted before.
Yeah.
Submitted on the ground.
Yeah.
The place that he wasn't desperately trying to avoid, because, hey, man, I'll beat him there too. And then the last two was like, don't get taken down, don't get taken down, don't get taken down, lost the fights.
Yeah.
And that his self-assessment feels pretty...
That's good. Like, I when I listened to that, I thought that's pretty good. He's done some good reflection. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's more to it in terms of preparation and work being put in as well, which he'll have addressed himself if he has. But that's that fine line between being aware of the guy's tendencies. Like, he knows Dos Anjos wants to get in, pressure, take you down, beat you up, take you down again, beat you up. That's what he wants to do. Same with Eddie Alvarez. That's the same thing. It's the same thing he wants to do. Pressure, get you down, beat you up, get you down again. That's all he wants to do. And so you know the tendencies, that's good. You can be aware of them, you can plan for them. But it's still about what you're going to do.
Uh-huh.
That's the way it should be. Instead of trying to stop him, it's what am I going to do? Even if that's defensively. I'm not going to get my back against the fence. I'm going to stay in the center here. If I feel myself backing up, I'm going to spin off and go again, circle off. Keep it at a distance, in and out, whatever he had planned on doing. Make it about what you're doing instead of stopping the guy from doing what he wants to do. And that seems like it's the same thing, but it's very different.
It was Gilbert Melendez who was trying to stop Anthony Pettis from doing his thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I don't want him to hit me. I better stop him.
Yeah.
And Anthony was just like, I'm doing my thing, babe. You know, I'm just going to do my thing. And now you got to deal with my thing again. Whereas the other ones, it was like, can't let him take me down.
Mm-hmm.
Can't let him take me down. It's very striking, the two fights before it, when he won the belt and when he beat Melendez.
Yeah.
And then the next two, the mindset was opposite.
Yeah. And it seems like you hear it all the time. It sounds like the exact same piece of advice coming from a corner. Don't get taken down.
Yeah.
That sounds like the same as wide base.
Yeah.
You know, get the underhook.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same. You want the same result, but there's such a huge difference in the mindset and the perspective and where the focus is with that you're not going to be able to put in your best work when you're trying to not do something.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to not do something.
So Chad Laprise, who sent his best to you, and I ran into him in the airport coming back from Australia, where he fought and then took a week off. He was telling me in Ramdean that when he lost the fight before that, he got the first time he'd ever been dropped or TKO'd, he had been just watching this guy, studying his overhand right, man, he's got a good overhand right, I got to be ready for it. And he got knocked out by an overhand right.
Yeah, Bisping Dan Henderson.
Yeah, right. And Chad's very smart, you can see it. We should try to get him on the show sometime.
Yeah.
He's a really cool guy, get him on the show, because we could bring him in and just run some things past him. Maybe something we'll try in the next couple of weeks if he's up for it, because he has focused on the mind stuff a lot. He's very talented, very smooth, very skilled, and he's been focusing on that. So, but he quite rightly pointed out that he over-fixated on that weapon.
Yeah, and that happens. I've seen that happen so many times, where you're trying to, of course you don't want to get hit with that right hand. I mean, of course you don't. That's obvious. But then, what's the best way about going about that? And that's technical and physical, and in terms of your footwork and the way you're circling and all that stuff, there is a mental side to it as well, which is huge in terms of the perspective and the way you're looking at it and the way you're talking to yourself about it. So that's something that I always do with every fight prep with the guys, is they'll have things that they're aware of that the other guy wants to do, but then bringing it back to what is it you're going to do about it. And even defensively, it's not shutting him down. It's you doing stuff defensively. What are you doing?
And I would think a step even better is that thing is an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, if we can take his weapon and it may take it from a threat to an opportunity, when he throws that gives me the chance. And you could shape as a coach that the counter that we're looking for, when he throws that thing, that is a chance for us to land that counter.
Yeah, for sure. You
know? That's a step better. Then it is not just something I shouldn't be afraid of. Oh, awesome. That's coming. When that comes, I have this.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's, again, the mental impact of that is, like, not just the physical counter when he throws his thing. It's mentally that he's trying to do his thing, and he's not. So you're bringing him down if he's not being successful with his thing. And so that can have a knock-on effect mentally in how the fight goes and how the momentum of the fight plays out. It's not stopping him. It's you doing it. You're imposing your will on him by doing the correct technique, even defensively. Mm-hmm.
We should probably wrap up. Any other thoughts today? Anything? Any last thoughts?
I'm just excited to see Demetrius Johnson and John Jones fight. I really am. With all the stuff that's been going on all week with Conor and all that, that's all cool and it is what it is. But I just can't wait to see these guys fight.
Me too.
I just love watching Demetrius Johnson fight. I love watching John Jones fight. And I can't wait to see them.
Me too. And I always, and lately I feel like it's important to tell people they could lose.
Yeah.
Like it's very likely that we get a chance to see the best fighters in the world be the best fighters. These fights are possible opportunities for that. But the best fighters in the world lose.
Yeah.
And that more and more and more, my little default sort of undercurrent of something I'm trying to push out into the world is that every one of these fights has a million variables.
Yeah.
We expect John Jones to win. We expect Demetrius Johnson to look brilliant. Henry Cejudo is a great fighter, and he's a winner. You know, and so any of those things are possible.
Very much so.
But it'll be fun. And so last thing, I just want to tell people that we have been talking to Fight Network about trying to do this every week. So we are getting close now. The management loves the idea, so we're talking about that. Feel free, if you like, to tweet Fight Network or contact Fight Network in any way and tell them that you'd like to see this. We've been getting brilliant feedback from people, and it's been really, really nice. Yeah. And so the goal is to try to do this every week. I think it's only been a week since the last one.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it'll be in the next week or two till the next one, but I have a feeling within the next month we might make this happen on a weekly thing.
It's cool. There's always stuff to be talking about.
Yeah. And like most things, the deeper, and this is what at the root of what I love about fighting, but I'm sure anybody who has a deep passion for anything would say this about their thing. The deeper you look in search of an answer, what you generally find is some information that raises way more questions.
Yeah.
And that's the eternal excitement that I have for fighting. Like I said, I'm sure people who are passionate about anything find that true of their thing, too.
Yeah.
But, and so as a result, we could do this 3 times a week if we wanted to. Yeah. The deeper that we go, I'll have more questions for you, and you'll have answers as long as you have them. And if I keep asking you, eventually you're going to need to find even more answers. And as a result,
of course,
that's life.
I don't know is a thing that I'm okay with saying because there is so many variables, so many things out there it's good to not know because then it forces you to go and look for more information.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody for giving us such feedback. And I have been a little scatterbrained today, so that's something I'm going to work on for next week. But thank you very much. And follow David Mullins MMA on Twitter and go to his website, davidmullinssportpsychology.com. And I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. And thank you guys so much, and we will see you next time.